This is Wade's World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me on the east side of town?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World. It's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30 Central Standard Time in the United States, and your time for the voice of the people. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, where KABF 88.3 FM is located, or the east side of New Orleans, Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live-streamed at www.kabf.org. A podcast will be available to the show on Monday at that website. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Mireya Reith, who is the founder and executive director of the Arkansas United Community Coalition, based still in northwest Arkansas. Mireya, glad to have you with us again.
Good morning, Wade. Thank you for the opportunity to be accompanying you this morning.
Well, it's not a happy time, but what we're going to talk about is the, I'm going to call it the crisis, but the situation now with the new administration for immigrants, people who are have been waiting on deferred status, and everything else that you must be seeing coming through your doors throughout Arkansas. What is the temperature and feeling these days?
Well, as you might imagine, Wade, a lot of confusion and fear with immigrants from all backgrounds in Arkansas. A lot of times, I think the assumption, including from our own president, President Trump, is that we can look at immigration in little bubbles of isolation. And obviously, that's not the case. Regardless of where or how somebody came to this country, or even which specific country they've come from, but I would say for our work specifically, in Arkansas, what we're seeing, regardless of status, background, or nationality, mass fear and concern in this moment. And it really started the day after the election when we saw a rise in hate crimes and bullying in Arkansas against our immigrant families and children, many of whom awoke just trying to make sense of political news and had to go to school where they were told, in some cases even by teachers, that they should pack up and get ready to leave the country, that they will no longer be welcomed here.
Wow. And where did that happen? What part of it, was it all over the state or any specific areas? That's incredible, isn't it?
We actually, that was in all parts of the state. We heard and documented cases up here in northwest Arkansas. But we also did in places like Star City, Arkansas. And so it really was something. Now, you know, we have some strong leadership in our schools, some strong leadership in families that don't share that sentiment. I think that's one of the things that we're appealing to right now. It's not just to help our immigrants understand this moment, but to help broader Arkansans understand this moment. And there are folks that don't share President Trump's views on this. And we still see polling happening nationwide that says the majority of Americans are open to conversations on a pathway to citizenship. So not only are we seeing the policies coming down from D.C., creating this chaos, being insensitive to our society and our economy, but we also think that it undermines and is not in accord with values that broader Arkansans have. And individuals that are, you know, espousing hate in this moment and taking opportunity are folks that really haven't had the opportunity to engage with our community. And unfortunately, right now, are being led by myths and stereotypes. And maybe in a broader life frustration, we're given a simple narrative of who to blame and have latched onto this. And we just regret that on so many different levels. But also, when policy does change, there had always been a sensitivity especially in the last couple administrations, and that crosses party lines, of making changes slowly and with time so that families and communities and even law enforcement could adjust. And so that was, as you might imagine.
No, it's been shocking, and it's a national tragedy. Now, I've talked to people who I've worked with over the years in places like California and Arizona and elsewhere in the country, Florida, and they've actually noticed a drop in school attendance. People are afraid to have their children go to school, and in some cases, people are just moving into the shadows where at least even without the reform we'd hoped and worked for over the last 8 years of Obama, at least people were more and more out of the shadows. Are you hearing that in Arkansas as well, Mariah?
Yes, we are seeing that in Arkansas as well, and it's not just the school. It is health clinics where families that have the opportunity very legally to take advantage of health services or community clinics that have very specific policies of not inquiring about people's statuses. We find people not going and not attending to health issues, and we know we can't look at health issues in isolation in this country. If one group of folks gets sick, obviously that exposes broader populations. Food stamps is another area, a huge drop, and families that have legitimately, especially with citizen-born children, the opportunity to take advantage of food stamps, opting for starvation and hunger versus risking the possible sharing of information between government agencies and ICE. And I will say there were rumors of an executive order that would have enabled some of that type of sharing. That executive order was one of those leaks that did not actually get passed in those first round of orders in January of this past year. And so we are trying to do a very massive Know Your Rights campaign on all levels. And I will say where the situation, obviously, at the federal level, bleak. We do have some very strong local leadership here in Arkansas where they're not going to be, Arkansas will not be a place like in some of the states you mentioned, right? Like a California, Florida,
Exactly. Where
you have a mayor declaring a sanctuary city. We do have actually 10 communities who have issued welcoming proclamations, and Little Rock actually just reissued theirs this week as part of a national movement of mayors to say that they still believe in the value of immigrants to our communities, the positive economic impact, and that at this time and right now, and there's no directives mandating this, that law enforcement is not being, forced to act as immigration officials as of yet. And until something comes down clearly, their intention, as always, is just to focus on criminals, to be a resource for the community, and take complaints, because that's the other area as well. We rely so much, and it's until moments like these that we realize how much we rely on community policing. And right now, we have individuals who are victims of crimes not willing to report them because of concerns that a law enforcement official will ask them about their status. And it's things like this where we've been working hard in Arkansas to try and educate both on the side of law enforcement as well as our community, that it does not happen, and continue to make sure Arkansas is a place that that does not happen.
Mireya, let's talk about deportation. Right after the inauguration, there was a lot of concern that deportation was increasing. Obviously, the administration and others claimed, no, this was just same old, these were things we were already doing, this da-da-da-da-da. But at the same time, we're hearing that ICE agents and others feel emboldened now, particularly given the comments out of Washington and the White House, to pretty much do and operate almost any way they, with impunity, frankly. Are we seeing that kind of problem in Arkansas as well?
We are, it's a mix between ICE and law enforcement, where we have leadership coming out making very tangible statements that right now there's no change in policy. The main one they're relying on It's called self-deportation, where, you know, anytime ICE is having a meeting, somebody's in due process, they're encouraging them to think about leaving, which obviously is a state
of chilling,
and psychologically and such. But in terms of proactively changing how their officers are going out into the community and doing, you know, the types of deportation activities we'd expect, like raids or traffic stops or things like this, right now there has not been a ramp up at this time in Arkansas. That said, we have had from sources all over the state, law enforcement officials, so these are more in the sheriff's office, in the police departments, where an individual officer has said to a member of our community that we can expect, you know, possibly a ramp up, that law enforcement themselves is getting ready. And so those are some of the disconnect in what we're hearing between leadership and local law enforcement, and things that we're trying to get a handle on and to monitor and help our communities monitor. Right now, what there is mass confusion at all levels. And even though Secretary Kelly had issued one memo about a month out after the executive orders, it's still not clear what all has happened, and it doesn't, and it's not the kind of thing as was done in previous that made it all the way down to local offices for ICE, and it definitely didn't make it into law enforcement. And so there are definitely, just like we saw the space for hate crimes and bullying to rise after the election, we have seen for folks that do have and maybe carry some of these stereotypes with them a chance to have a backing and support to do that. But that's why we're trying to create right now neighborhood watch networks in our immigrant communities, where we can monitor individual situations and create a pipeline for reporting so that we can push back. Because at the very least, we have our leadership confirmed to help us with this. And by leadership, I mean our police chiefs, our sheriffs, our mayors. But we need to be able to document the cases when this happens so that they can take action. And we can try and create some alignment here in the absence of what the federal government has offered.
Exactly. We're talking to Mireya Reith, who's the founder and director of the Arkansas United Community Coalition. Have we had any of the, I mean, there was obviously the case where the woman in Arizona went in for her annual interview and was summarily deported. Are we having those kind of situations happen where people are trying to follow what they think are the rules and all of a sudden, you know, no criminal activity, no nothing, zoom, they're on their way out? Are you hearing those kind of cases in Arkansas?
Yes, actually, Little Rock was amongst one of the first communities, literally the day after the executive order. A young woman from Guatemala who has an open asylum case, 17-year-old girl, was picked off the street while walking home in Little Rock and started on deportation proceedings. And that was probably the first and most egregious example. We've had other examples where individuals going in for their quarterly reporting to ICE, individuals that have ankle bracelets or due to their due process with the courts have to have periodic check-ins with the ICE office confirming that they haven't moved, confirming that they're still here in the United States, that they're still seeking due process. And we have seen a certain level of coordination once again between the courts and ICE and within ICE itself in taking folks that have due process. I will say that happened almost a little bit more immediately after the executive orders. We have worked hard with attorneys across the state to highlight those, and media, mainstream media, did just a wonderful job of putting that on the front page of our newspapers in a way that I think sent a red alert to our ICE offices. And so we have seen some of that die down, but we are trying to, again, empower our community to communicate with us when those things happen, because these executive orders have been in place does not mean that due process automatically gets thrown out the window. And so as part of the broader Know Your Rights of our community, we're having to inform them of that and just let people know that where, again, some people taking the law into their own hand, we still have a place right now to fight back on this. And I will say, right now with the budget talks in Washington, D.C., obviously the ability of President Trump to fulfill, you know, this vision that he's laid out with his executive orders are going to largely depend on whether Congress does allocate those funds. And I was even personally in D.C. the first part of this week meeting with our entire congressional delegation in D.C. to try and let them know that from Arkansas, if you're going to talk about a skinny budget, we shouldn't be ramping up on policies that we know aren't going to produce outcomes and will have broader reverberations for our community here in Arkansas.
Well, I've got to ask now. I had a million questions, but I've got to ask now, what kind of response did you get when you were in Washington talking to our delegation? Did you get anything that could be described as positive?
Obviously, Senator Bozeman will have a huge role in that process, was open to the conversation, as was, you know, Congressman Womack with his role on the House side as well, on in both of their cases, appropriations as related to security in our country.
Sure.
I think the comment I got from all of them was broader. It wasn't specific to those line items, but maybe a cognizance on two levels, right? One, this was a starter budget. I heard hands down from our whole congressional delegation.
Nobody wants to own this thing, do they?
Nope. Nobody wants to own this budget, and that includes on immigration.
Uh-huh.
They were like, just know that this is a starter budget. This one's not going to pass. We're starting there. But I do think there was an empathy and cognizance that wherever we stand on the conversation about a wall, that taxpayers weren't going to pay for that, right? And so to have that be one of the hefty line items here, I do think there was a recognition that that was an area that needs to be pushed back on with our president here.
At the same time, there's huge pushback on this 20% import tax from everybody from the Koch brothers to, I mean, their ads running. You know, they're running on cable TV thinking that the president, since he watches cable TV, maybe they're talking directly to him and his Twitter hand. You know, this is just going to be a mess, isn't it?
It is, but as you noted, it's across stakeholders here, and this is something that we had been saying for so long, even since when on the positive side, that we were working across stakeholders, and that includes our business community. Obviously, there's a strong economic narrative around immigration in our state and in our country, and I will say I was excited to hear that the Chamber of Commerce was just 1 week before talking to our congressional delegation amongst their various talking points, also concern on immigration and the budget as well. And also, and our senator, our own Senator Tom Cotton's leadership that he's trying to take in slashing legal immigration opportunities. It's, once again, one of those, just like with enforcement, proven not to work. It's somehow based on this belief that our economy is stagnant and that you're going to increase wages if you just keep to one small pool of low-skill workers and put investment behind high skills. And it's based on this idea that somehow we can, across cultures, define a nuclear family as just parents and kids, and that somehow, again, across cultures, we don't all, including in Arkansas, have a broader value for families and tying that to the citizenship process.
Maria, did Senator Cotton's office meet with you when you were in Washington?
Yes, and the senator himself, he is considering this one of his lead legislation this year, and so and obviously been meeting with the president on this as well, and so was very willing to meet with us. It was insightful for us to hear more about his values, where he's coming at this with this, but obviously this is going to be an ongoing debate, as we've let them know, because of our grave concern. It's bad enough that we're looking at such a narrow window in terms of undocumented immigration and individuals without status, but then to also do the same with legal immigration doesn't align in any way, again, to whether it's our family bands, needs, or economic needs. And farmers across Arkansas, we know, are up in arms about this potential approach.
And that was going to be my next question. Historically, one of the advocates for looser immigration policies have been in the you know, poultry industry, the tomato farmers down there around Warren, you know, when we used to have catfish. I mean, all these agricultural interests have been huge advocates for more immigration and looser immigration. And how does that align with Senator Cotton's position?
And that was a part of the points that we brought to his attention.
I bet you did.
Even that his own colleague from Arkansas, Congressman Crawford, now for a few sessions and says he's going to do so again, has had an ag job bill out there that's specifically trying to look at opportunities for migrant workers. And so it just, for us, it just, again, it felt like a piece of legislation that was being largely dictated by the Beltway and Washington, D.C., and their very narrow look on immigration, and was not in any way aligned to even what our own needs are and values and interests are here in Arkansas.
We just can't allow personal ambition to cloud the needs of citizens and others, all the entire population of Arkansas. And I think sometimes I get in D.C. and I just forget all that. Mira, we're talking about your operation. You now mentioned you have seven different centers. Where are they located around the state?
Yes, immigration is many times thought as just the Northwest Arkansas issue here in Arkansas, but actually our immigration touches every single region of the state. And that's why when we founded Arkansas United around the philosophy of organizing and building the advocacy and civic participation of our immigrant community, we knew we had to take a statewide approach. So a year and a half, now almost 2 years ago, we had the opportunity to create a backbone for that work, and that's through seven regional immigrant resource centers that are really supposed to be these one-stop shops where immigrants can come in and get connected to different service providers and opportunities. And most specifically, we've worked with Catholic Charities to enhance immigration legal support. Arkansas is 50th in the country in attorneys per capita. It's harder to get an attorney in Arkansas than anywhere else in the country, and within specialized concentrations like immigration, as you might imagine, even harder for our immigrant community, folks that go their whole lives without ever consulting with an attorney. And so we've created this model where we can get this support. And those centers are located still in Springdale. Northwest Arkansas is still important to immigrants, but we're also located in Fort Smith, Bequeen, Little Rock, Monticello, McGee, and Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Monticello, McGee, well, I must pass right by. I mean, but as I drive through the state, I'm frequently in McGee. I'll have to look for where you are. And, of course, near there is where the old Japanese internment center was, speaking about how we've dealt with immigrants and our own people in the past. The Dreamers, so far, the Trump administration, to my knowledge at least, has been relatively silent on that issue. Before the inauguration, it looked like they were part of the targeted group as well. But has anything come forward in that issue?
I'm glad you brought that up, Wade. That was actually another point we were talking with our congressional delegation on. Exactly as you stated, we were concerned, and amongst the leaked executive orders that first week was one that suggested the slashing of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival program for our Dreamers. And again, that's an opportunity for qualifying undocumented youth who've been here for at least 5 years and are working toward their higher education. Either they're a registered student or they're in some sort of vocational training. It gives them an opportunity of a work permit and driver's license. Obviously, tremendous program. Arkansas has about 11,000 youth who are documented. We had one of the highest acceptance rates in the country for individuals both applying and getting DACA, and a program that obviously doesn't just infect immigrants and their families. These are 11,000 employers right now who are benefiting from documented youth, and I'm proud that my nonprofit, Arkansas United, is amongst those. The president, though, and that was, I think, a hard fought on a lot of levels, and including the business community that helped bring attention in December prior to President Trump coming to office about the repercussions of targeting the youth and in such a way. And so at that time, what we heard from the Trump administration was, we'll let Congress put forth a proposal. And back in December, there was what was called the Bridge Act, which was looked at as one piece of legislation that would have replaced DACA coming out of Congress, would have offered an avenue for the continuation of that program. But that, as you might imagine, with everything on Congress's plate, it's been stalled in committee right now. We are hearing that within the next week or two, we can expect the DREAM Act to also come out of the House of Representatives. Bipartisan is our understanding that might look once again at a permanent solution for our undocumented children and especially these kids with DACA. So we made our congressmen aware of that. We hoped for their leadership in joining that effort. But it we'll see when I think the legislation comes out who the sponsors are will in some ways determine to what extent there might be energy in that effort. But right now, the DACA children remain vulnerable. President Trump has not had any victories here, except in immigration. And even then, again, it's tied to the budget and what Congress decides. And so we are concerned in his flashing out, as he has already done early on, anyone is potentially a victim. And so we take nothing for granted with our DACA kids. And one of the reasons we're making sure they're renewing those work permits. And let's
go to that point. I mean, one of the strategies they could do is just let the clock run out. You want to explain how that works?
Yes, right now their work permits last for 2 years. And so many youth, in anticipation of the Trump administration coming to power, renewed those applications in hopes of getting as many of those 2 years as possible. And so the idea would be then that for as long as they have their work permit, employers and these individuals would be able to continue to work as they have been. But it's not an ideal situation. Our goal here is to fight for a permanent solution for our kids. And so we'll see if Congress can come up with something.
And how are people getting information? And if people who are listening today and will listen in the future want to know more about this situation, what are the best sources you'd recommend?
Well, we definitely are taking advantage of the fact that it seems everyone in Arkansas is connected via Facebook to really, really ramp up our efforts at communicating news and resources and events through that venue. So we can be found on Facebook at Arkansas United Community Coalition, and it's a bilingual page where we're on multiple times a day giving news highlights and resources and information. It's also a place where individuals can come and send us a private message to report if they see ICE or if they're concerned about a loved one, where we can connect them to regional support either with us or with local attorneys to make sure they're assisted. We are hoping to take that, though, to the next level and look forward in the next month to announcing an app that would be specific to our organization and support us in this reporting pipeline. But we do also, in the interim, have a website, www.arkansascoalition.org. And we maintain now a statewide hotline that anybody during normal hours, that it will be answered by one of our paid staff. And in the late hour evenings, we have the ability to check messages to be able to try and connect people in the most timely way with the information they need and support they need. And that number is 479-763-2822.
May I ask you to repeat all that? But one more question before we end. Is there any kind of rapid response network that people could join if they're called to action?
We're creating family defender committees.
Now we're talking. I want to be part of that.
And we'll have regional meetings around these family defender committees the first week in April. Right now, our organizers have been going out and connecting and having one-on-ones with individuals and partners across the state. And again, if you even call our number at 479-763-2822, you can be connected. We'll connect you with our local organizer to hear about the details of your regional event. Or if you go to our Facebook page, Arkansas United Community Coalition, all of the regional convenings will be there. And again, these will be opportunities to connect with either other immigrants or allies, bilingual safe spaces where we can talk about the steps ahead. Just to highlight a couple things.
We're going to have to go, but
really
we may have to get you back again. You've been one of the few people I've asked back, and maybe after this gets rolling, we'll have Mireya and the Arkansas United Community Coalition. She's told you her Facebook and website. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. We say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest, it'll be Eric Schrag from Montreal on the Immigrant Workers Center in Montreal doing exciting things. This has been Wade Rathke for Wade's World. Thank you.